Shield and Storm. The Gulf War signaled a revolution in armed conflict 30 years ago this month. By Richard A. Lacouament, Jr. The Gulf War was a major success for the U.S. military. An extraordinarily professional band of well-led soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines delivered battlefield victory using an impressive array of weapons and other equipment within a formidable coalition of allies and partners. It is worthwhile to look back and recognize what a powerful moment the Gulf War represented for the American profession of arms. Think about what we can still learn from the conflict, and be conscious of the many ways that national security and military affairs have evolved from that war in the intervening 30 years. The war. The Gulf War began with the unwarranted Iraqi invasion of Kuwait on August 2, 1990, an act of aggression that shocked the world. Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi dictator, launched a sharp campaign that overwhelmed Kuwait in just a few days and put Iraqi military forces on the border with Saudi Arabia, poised for potential further aggression. The Kuwaiti government fled to exile in Saudi Arabia. Iraqis pillaged Kuwait and seized hostages, including non-combatants from the United States and other countries. President George H.W. Bush made it clear that Iraqi aggression would not stand. He moved swiftly to lay the diplomatic, economic, and military groundwork for a strategy to back up his words. Diplomatic negotiations led to Saudi Arabia's request for U.S. forces to assist in its defense. U.S. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, and Coast Guard units deployed to the region after Operation Desert Shield started August 8th. Military coalition partners from NATO, such as the United Kingdom and France, and forces from regional partners like Egypt and Syria, joined the United States and Saudi Arabia in defense. Economic and financial support from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Germany, and Japan, among other nations, was instrumental to coalition efforts. Deft U.S. diplomacy gained U.N. approval, including support from the Soviet Union, for the restoration of Kuwaiti sovereignty and biting economic sanctions against Iraq. After Iraq failed to meet the January 15, 1991 deadline for withdrawal set by the United Nations, the coalition launched Operation Desert Storm. Coalition forces unleashed a devastating air campaign that battered Iraqi strategic, operational, and tactical targets. Iraqi efforts to hit back at the coalition and to goad Israel into fighting relied heavily on their intimidating but largely ineffective Scud missiles. Iraq's late January ground attack toward the Saudi town of Kafji, intended to seize the initiative and induce a broader ground war, was quickly put down by Allied air and ground counterattacks. After more than 5 weeks of coalition air attacks and the menace of potential amphibious assault from Marine Corps and Navy forces in the Persian Gulf, the coalition hurled a multi-corps attack at Iraqi forces February 24th. In a 100-hour ground campaign that charged forward relentlessly under an umbrella of air superiority, Allied forces destroyed, captured, or routed Iraqi military formations and liberated Kuwait. Bush called an end to combat operations, later formalized in an armistice March 3rd. Reasons for success. The outcome of Desert Storm gave the United States and its partners much to be proud of. The U.S. military, largely rebuilt in the wake of the Vietnam War, was a marvel of technological sophistication. Excellent weapons systems on the ground, at sea and in the air, such as M1 Abrams main battle tanks, Patriot missile systems, Apache helicopters, F-117 stealth fighters, air and sea-launched cruise missiles, and Navy carrier strike groups, were supplemented by unmatched space-based resources, including the satellite-enabled Global Positioning System, GPS, that revolutionized navigation and targeting. The coalition's astonishingly effective naval, air, and ground forces overwhelmed what had been the world's fourth largest military and one of the most combat experienced due to the 8-year war with Iran that ended in 1988. On paper, the Iraqi military, particularly its air force and army, was large and technologically advanced. It's worth remembering that Iraqi forces were similarly and sometimes even better equipped than the coalition, given the vast array of capable platforms largely acquired from the USSR, the People's Republic of China, and other communist bloc countries. Before the coalition launched combat operations, the daunting nature of Iraq's well-entrenched defensive, supported by heavily armored ground forces, such as the Republican Guards, advanced fighter aircraft, and Scud missiles, led to casualty estimates of tens of thousands of anticipated dead and wounded. But Iraqi forces miserably failed in their efforts to defend against coalition attacks. Coalition casualties, all certainly regrettable, were far lower than even the most favorable projections. The primary reason for the disparity points to the United States and its coalition partners' most spectacular advantage. The astonishingly well-trained and well-educated professionals who were the heart and soul of the coalition. The Iraqis were vastly overmatched by the commitment and talent of the people who integrated ground, sea, air, and space operations to overwhelm Iraqi forces with dilemmas they could not resolve. For Americans in particular, success in the Gulf War was an indicator of a tremendous renewal of military competence since the Vietnam War. Generals Colin Powell and Norman Schwarzkopf were among many Vietnam-era leaders who helped overcome the military hollowness of the 1970s, developed an all-volunteer force following the end of the draft in 1973, built new formations, and developed professionals, officers, NCOs, and junior enlisted, who succeeded in the Gulf War. Concepts such as the Army and Air Force Airland Battle unhinged Iraqi plans. Exceptional strategic mobility on the sea and in the air enabled assembly of forces in northern Saudi Arabia, initially for defense and eventually for offense. Thoughtful diplomacy built a broad coalition to compel Iraqi compliance with UN resolutions. Economic sanctions continued to squeeze Iraqi options. Information operations isolated Iraq. The Gulf War was also an important test case for jointness. Improved planning, deployment, coordination, and operation of U.S. forces were in part due to advancements driven by the 1986 Goldwater-Nichols Defense Reorganization Act that, among other things, strengthened the joint staff and empowered better joint leadership by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and combatant commanders. During Desert Shield and Desert Storm, the positive effect of Goldwater-Nichols was quite heartening. This was true of the chairman's, Powell's, enhanced leadership in the D.C.-based policy world, as well as in the authority of the regional combatant commander, Schwarzkopf, to organize and command forces in the Middle East. Post-war issues. As successful as the United States and its allies were in punishing aggression, liberating Kuwait, and improving regional stability, the Gulf War served as an important inflection point in the evolution of the character not only of this war, but of warfare itself. The sense of how armed conflict might be changing took on even greater significance as the Soviet Union, the United States' Cold War adversary, collapsed post-Gulf War. Although Saddam's regime survived, coalition forces continued to provide military containment that eventually included no-fly zones over northern and southern Iraq. Furthermore, economic sanctions continued, and an intrusive weapon of mass destruction, WMD, inspection program was created to force Iraqi compliance with UN resolutions. Many saw the war as evidence of a revolution in military affairs, including dramatic advancements in the networked use of intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance, ISR platforms, stealth technology, satellite guidance, precision strike, and overall power projection. The lopsided results against Iraq seemed to provide powerful deterrence for those who might wish to challenge the U.S. military. In the following decade, there was little or no evidence of decline in U.S. military advantages. Combat operations in Afghanistan, 2001, and in Iraq, 2003, provided swift and satisfying successes. Nonetheless, efforts to consolidate battlefield gains were much more ambiguous in these post-9/11 wars. Efforts to build and sustain local self-governance in the wake of regime change deteriorated into confounding counterinsurgency campaigns in both countries. In the wake of the Gulf War, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, Islamists, and other potential adversaries took note of U.S. strengths and potential weaknesses as they adapted their own forces and strategies. Asymmetric approaches included attempts to deny U.S. forces air and sea mobility to access potential conflict areas, to oppose the United States and its allies with hybrid or gray zone challenges, such as cyber intrusions, proxy attacks, and social media exploitation by Russia, China, and Iran, among others, and to develop or expand WMD capabilities, such as North Korea's efforts to build nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles. Additionally, the absence of significant irregular warfare in the Gulf War, in contrast to Vietnam, left an open question about whether the United States was as capable against irregular or counterinsurgency warfare that appears to undergird challenges that future adversaries in Somalia, Afghanistan, and Iraq tried to exploit. Legacy. Successes in the Gulf War were impressive and instructive. It also played an important role in my own life. As a junior field artillery captain in the Army's 1st Armored Division, I was in the midst of the storm that swept Iraqi forces out of Kuwait. I was proud to be a bit player enfolded in the joint, multinational team that engineered a winning feat and brought me home safely. It is also deeply sobering to remember, with gratitude and humility, our compatriots who made the ultimate sacrifice doing what our nation asked of them. As much as I could see and appreciate firsthand at the time, it was hard to fathom the entirety of the war, including the legacy of countless veterans who made our success possible. In the years since, in other units, in other combat zones, in training exercises, and in the halls of education, the 1991 Gulf War has proven to be an enduring, albeit incomplete, touchstone that resonates with both positive and cautionary lessons. 30 years on, it's still worth honoring, analyzing, and revisiting. The growth and professional rebirth of the U.S. military after Vietnam was remarkable, but success provides no grounds for complacency. In the facet most central to success, the incredible spirit, competence, and commitment of American military professionals, the United States continues to hold superiority over potential adversaries. This is a powerful heritage of those who served and those who continue to serve. Captions and sidebars. Caption: A Navy F-14A Tomcat from Fighter Squadron 211 out of Naval Air Station Oceana in Virginia Beach, Virginia, flies over burning Kuwaiti oil wells during Operation Desert Storm on February 1, 1991. End of caption. Sidebar. We may ask, why act now? Why not wait? The answer is clear. The world could wait no longer. Sanctions, though having some effect, showed no signs of accomplishing their objective. I am convinced not only that we will prevail, but that out of the horror of combat will come the recognition that no nation can stand against a world united. No nation will be permitted to brutally assault its neighbor. President George H.W. Bush, in an address to the nation, January 16, 1991. 39 nations in the Allied coalition, 697,000 U.S. troops deployed to the Persian Gulf region for Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, 382 U.S. military casualties, 116,000 plus U.S. and coalition combat air sorties, 100 hours spent on a ground campaign before Kuwait was liberated. Caption: The Desert Shield airlift transported troops and supplies from 120 locations around the world, exceeding the tonnage of the 1948-1949 Berlin airlift in 22 days. End of caption. Sidebar: You are America's best, and we are proud of you. Long after these worrisome days have passed, your courage and dedication to your country will be remembered. American Legion National Commander Robert Turner, speaking to deployed U.S. service members in the March 1991 American Legion magazine. A new generation of wartime veterans. On September 4, 1991, delegates to the 73rd American Legion National Convention in Phoenix unanimously passed Resolution 1, urging Congress to amend the Legion's Constitution to expand eligibility to anyone who served on active military duty from August 2, 1990, to the date of cessation of hostilities as determined by the government of the United States. Family Support Network. In September 1990, the American Legion Family Support Network, FSN, was formed to provide volunteer help for families of U.S. military personnel deployed to the Middle East. By calling a national toll-free number, families were connected to local American Legion family members for assistance with childcare, lawn work, auto maintenance, and household needs. American Legion National Commander Robert Turner visited U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia to spread the word about the program, and directed thousands of copies of the American Legion magazine with details of how to request assistance be sent to service members. Throughout the post-9/11 era, the Legion's Family Support Network has continued to support military families during deployments. 800-504-4098. Legion.org/FSN. Sidebar: As far as Saddam Hussein being a great military strategist, he is neither a strategist, nor is he schooled in the operational arts, nor is he a tactician, nor is he a general, nor is he a soldier. Other than that, he's a great military man. I want you to know that. General H. Norman Schwarzkopf, commander of Allied forces in the Persian Gulf, at a February 28, 1991 press conference. DOD estimates the cost of the Gulf War at $61 billion, with Gulf states contributing $36 billion and Germany and Japan chipping in $16 billion. As a percent of gross domestic product, 0.3%, Desert Storm is the least expensive war in U.S. history. End of sidebar. Sidebar: This time we would try to do it right. We were trying to do it with the right blend of political objectives, decisive military means, and making sure that when we had accomplished that objective, we would know it, and we would stop the war. The American people understood that. They supported it, and they saw political and military leaders who seemed to know what they were doing. General Colin Powell, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in PBS Frontline, Gulf War Oral History. End of sidebar. Sidebar. To educate and to honor. The National Desert Storm and Desert Shield Memorial in Washington, D.C. is nearing final design approval, but requires nearly $20 million more in fundraising before the project can break ground. Located at 23rd Street and Constitution Avenue, just north of the Lincoln Memorial and a short walk from the Vietnam Wall, the memorial will commemorate the Gulf War's historical significance, as well as honor the hundreds of thousands of U.S. and coalition military personnel who served and helped liberate Kuwait. The estimated cost to build the Desert Storm Memorial is $40 million. More than $9.2 million has been raised, with an additional $10 million pledge from Kuwait. In 2017, the American Legion passed a resolution supporting the memorial's construction. Go to the National Desert Storm War Memorial Association's website, ndswm.org, to donate and learn more about the memorial's history and design. End of sidebar. Richard A. Lacquement, Jr., Ph.D., is Research Professor of National Security Affairs in the Army War College's Strategic Studies Institute. He is a retired Army colonel, field artillery and strategist, with combat experience in Desert Shield Storm, 1990 to 1991, Iraq, 2003, and Afghanistan, 2010 to 2011. He has been a professor at West Point, the Naval War College, and the Army War College, including 8 years as dean of the latter's School of Strategic Land Power. The opinions expressed in this essay do not represent those of the Army War College, the Department of Defense, or any part of the U.S. government.